In such a laughing ecstasy of love, Krishna, or matters pertaining to Krishna, are the cause of the laughter. In such laughing devotional service, there are symptoms of jubilation, laziness, concealed feelings, and similar other seemingly disturbing elements. According to Srila Rupa Goswami's calculation, laughter in ecstatic love can be broken down into six divisions. These divisions, according to different degrees of smiling, are called in the Sanskrit language smita, hasita, vihasita, avahasita, apahasita, and atahasita. These six classes of smiling can be classified as major and minor. The major division includes smita, hasita, and vihasita smiling, and the minor division includes avahasita, apahasita, and atahasita smiling. When one is smiling but his teeth are not visible, one can distinctly mark a definite change in the eyes and in the cheeks. This is called smita smiling. Once, when Krishna was stealing yogurt, Jarati, the headmistress of the house, could detect his activities, and she was therefore coming very hurriedly to catch him. At that time, Krishna became very much afraid of Jarati and went to his elder brother Baladev. He said, quote, "My dear brother, I have stolen yogurt. Just see, Jarati is coming hurriedly to catch me," unquote. When Krishna was thus seeking the shelter of Baladev because he was being chased by Jarati, all the great sages in the heavenly planets began to smile. This smiling is called smita smiling. Smiling in which the teeth are slightly visible is called hasita smiling. One day Abhimanyu, the so-called husband of Radharani, was returning home, and at that time he could not see that Krishna was there in his house. Krishna immediately changed his dress to look exactly like Abhimanyu and approached Abhimanyu's mother, Jatila, addressing her thus, quote, "My dear mother, I am your real son, Abhimanyu, but just see, Krishna, dressed up like me, is coming before you," unquote. Jatila, the mother of Abhimanyu, immediately believed that Krishna was her own son and thus became very angry at her real son who was coming home. She began to drive away her real son who was crying, "Mother, mother, what are you doing?" Seeing this incident, all the girlfriends of Radharani who were present there began to smile, and a portion of their teeth was visible. This is an instance of hasita smiling. When the teeth are distinctly visible in a smile, that is called vihasita. One day when Krishna was engaged in stealing butter and yogurt in the house of Jatila, he assured his friends, quote, "My dear friends, I know that this old lady is now sleeping very profoundly because she is breathing very deeply. Let us silently steal butter and yogurt without making any disturbance," unquote. But the old lady, Jatila, was not sleeping, so she could not contain her smiling, and her teeth immediately became distinctly visible. This is an instance of vihasita smiling. In a state of smiling, when the nose becomes puffed and the eyes squint, the smiling is called avahasita. Once, early in the morning, when Krishna returned home after performing his rasa dance, Mother Yashoda looked upon Krishna's face and addressed him thus, quote, "My dear son, why do your eyes look like they have been smeared with some oxides? Have you dressed yourself with the blue garments of Baladev?" Unquote. When Mother Yashoda was addressing Krishna in that way, a girlfriend who was nearby began to smile with a puffed nose and squinting eyes. This is an instance of avahasita smiling. The gopi knew that Krishna had been enjoying the ras dance and that Mother Yashoda could not detect her son's activities or understand how he had become covered with the gopi's makeup. Her smiling was in the avahasita feature. When tears from the eyes are added to the smiling and the shoulders are shaking, the smile is called apahasita. When child Krishna was dancing in response to the singing of the old maidservant Jarati, Narad was astonished. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who controls all the movements of great demigods like Brahma, was now dancing to the indications of an old maidservant. Seeing this fun, Narad also began to dance, and his shoulders trembled and his eyes moved. Due to his smiling, his teeth also became visible, and on account of the glaring effulgence from his teeth, the clouds in the skies turned silver. When a smiling person claps his hands and leaps in the air, the smiling expression changes into atihasita, or overwhelming laughter. An example of atihasita was manifested in the following incident. Krishna once addressed Jarati thus, quote, "My dear good woman, the skin of your face is now slackened, and so your face exactly resembles a monkey's. As such, the king of the monkeys, Balimukha, has selected you as his worthy wife." Unquote. While Krishna was teasing Jarati in this way, she replied that she was certainly aware of the fact that the king of the monkeys was trying to marry her, but she had already taken shelter of Krishna, the killer of many powerful demons, and therefore she had already decided to marry Krishna instead of the king of the monkeys. On hearing this sarcastic reply by the talkative Jarati, all the cowherd girls present there began to laugh very loudly and clap their hands. This laughter, accompanied by the clapping of hands, is called atihasita. Sometimes there are indirect sarcastic remarks which also create atihasita circumstances. An example of one such remark is a statement which was made by one of the cowherd girls to Kutila, the daughter of Jatila and sister of Abhimanyu, the so-called husband of Radharani. Indirectly, Kutila was insulted by the following statement, quote, "My dear Kutila, daughter of Jatila, your breasts are as long as string beans, simply dry and long. Your nose is so gorgeous that it defies the beauty of the noses of frogs, and your eyes are more beautiful than the eyes of dogs. Your lips defy the flaming cinders of fire, and your abdomen is as beautiful as a big drum. Therefore, my dear beautiful Kutila, you are the most beautiful of all the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, and because of your extraordinary beauty, I think you must be beyond the attraction of the sweet blowing of Krishna's flute." Unquote. And now chapter 46, Astonishment and Chivalry. Lokanam hitakaranam tribhuvane mannam saranyakanam. Astonishment. The ecstasy of astonishment in devotional service is perceived in two ways: directly by the experience of one's own eyes, and indirectly by hearing from others. When Narad came to see the activities of the Lord at Dwarka, and he saw that Krishna was present within every palace in the same body and was engaged in different activities, he was struck with wonder. This is one of the examples of astonishment in devotional service by direct perception. One of the friends of Mother Yashoda said, quote, "Yashoda, just see the fun. On the one hand, there is your child, who is always captivated by sucking the milk from your breast. And on the other hand, there is the great Govardhan Hill, which can obstruct the passing of the clouds. But still, just see how wonderful it is that this great Govardhan Hill is resting on the finger of your child's left hand, just as though it were a toy. Is this not very mysterious? Unquote. This statement is another example of astonishment in devotional service by direct perception. An instance of astonishment in devotional service by indirect perception occurred when Maharaj Pariksit heard from Shukdev Goswami about Krishna's killing Narakasura, who had been fighting Krishna with 11 Akshohini divisions of soldiers. Each division of Akshohini soldiers contained several thousand elephants, several thousand horses and chariots, and several hundreds of thousands of infantry soldiers. Narakasura possessed 11 such divisions, and all of them were throwing arrows toward Krishna. But Krishna killed them all simply by throwing 3 arrows from his side. When Maharaj Pariksit heard of this wonderful victory, he immediately rubbed the tears from his eyes and became overwhelmed with joy. This instance is an example of astonishment in devotional service by indirect perception through oral reception. There is another example of indirect astonishment. Trying to test Krishna to see if he were truly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Brahma stole all the cowherd boys and cows from him. But after a few seconds, he saw that Krishna was still present with all the cows, calves, and cowherd boys, exactly in the same way as before. When Lord Brahma described this incident to his associates on the Satyaloka planet, they all became astonished. Brahma told them that after taking away all the boys, he saw Krishna again playing with the same boys in the same fashion. Their bodily complexion was blackish, almost like Krishna's, and they all had 4 arms. The same calves and cows were still present there in the same original fashion. Even while describing this incident, Brahma became almost overwhelmed. He added, quote, "And the most astonishing thing was that many other Brahmas from many different universes had also come there to worship Krishna and his associates." Unquote. Similarly, when there was a forest fire in the Bandi Ravana, Krishna instructed his friends to close their eyes tightly, and they all did this. Then, when Krishna had extinguished the fire, the cowherd boys opened their eyes and saw that they had been relieved from the danger and that their cows and calves were all safe. They began to perceive the wonder of the situation simply by guessing how Krishna had saved them. This is another instance of indirect perception causing astonishment in devotional service. The activities of a person, even if they are not very extraordinary, create an impression of wonder in the heart and mind of the person's friends. But even very wonderful activities performed by a person who is not one's friend will not create any impression. It is because of love that one's wonderful activities create an impression in the mind. Chivalry. When on account of love and devotional service for the Lord, there is special valorous enthusiasm, the resultant activities are called chivalrous. These chivalrous activities can be manifested in the acts of mock fighting, giving charity, showing mercy, and executing religious principles. By performing chivalrous activities in fighting, one is called Yudhavira. By charitable activities, one is called Dhanavira. By showing extraordinary mercy, one is called Dayavira. And when one is munificent in executing religious rites, he is called Dharmavira. In all such different chivalrous activities, Krishna is the object. When a friend wants to satisfy Krishna by performing some chivalrous activities, the friend becomes the challenger and Krishna himself becomes the opponent. Or else Krishna may give audience to the fighting, and by his desire, another friend becomes the opponent. A friend once challenged Krishna thus, quote, "My dear Madhava, you are very restless because you think that no one can defeat you. But if you do not flee from here, then I shall show you how I can defeat you, and my friends will be very satisfied to see this." Unquote. Krishna and Sridhama were very intimate friends, yet Sridhama, out of anger with Krishna, challenged him. When both of them began to fight, all the friends on the bank of the Yamuna enjoyed the wonderful fighting of the two friends. They prepared some arrows for mock fighting, and Krishna began to throw his arrows at Sridhama. Sridhama began to block these arrows by whirling his pole, and by Sridhama's chivalrous activities, Krishna became very satisfied. Such mock fighting generally takes place among chivalrous persons and creates wonderful excitement for all viewers. There is a statement in the Harivamsa that sometimes Arjuna and Krishna fought in the presence of Kunti, and Arjuna would be defeated by Krishna. In such chivalrous fighting between friends, there is sometimes bragging, complacence, pride, power, taking to weapons, challenging, and standing as an opponent. All of these symptoms become impetuses to chivalrous devotional service. One friend challenged Krishna thus, quote, "My dear friend Damodar, you are an expert only in eating. You have defeated Subala only because he is weak and you adopted cheating means. Don't advertise yourself to be a great fighter by such action. You have advertised yourself as a serpent, and I am the peacock who will now defeat you." Unquote. The peacock is the ablest enemy of the serpent. In such fighting between friends, when the self-advertisement becomes personal, learned scholars say that it is sub-ecstasy. When there is a roaring challenge, certain kinds of movement for fighting, enthusiasm, no weapons, and assurance given to frightened witnesses, all these chivalrous activities are called sub-ecstasy. One friend addressed Krishna in this manner, quote, "My dear Madhusudana, you know my strength, yet you are encouraging Bhadrasena and not me to challenge mighty Baladev. By this action, you are simply insulting me because my arms are as strong as the bolts of the gate." Unquote. A devotee once said, quote, "My dear Lord Krishna, may your challenger, Sridhama, become glorious for his chivalrous activities, such as vibrating like a thundercloud and roaring like a lion. May all glories go to Sridhama's chivalrous activities." Unquote. Chivalrous activities in the matter of fighting, charity, mercy, and execution of religious rituals are called constitutional, whereas expressions of pride, emotion, endurance, kindness, determination, jubilation, enthusiasm, jealousy, and remembrance are called unconstitutional. When Stoka Krishna, one of the many friends of Krishna, was fighting with him, his father chastised him for fighting with Krishna, who was the life and soul of all residents of Vrindavan. Upon hearing these chastisements, Stoka Krishna stopped his fighting. But Krishna continued to challenge him, and thus, in order to meet the challenge, Stoka Krishna took his pole and began to display his dexterity by whirling it. Once Sridhama challenged Bhadrasena and said to him, quote, "My dear friend, you needn't be afraid of me yet. I shall first of all defeat our brother Balaram, and then I shall beat Krishna, and then I shall come to you." Unquote. Bhadrasena therefore left the party of Balaram and joined Krishna, and he agitated his friends as much as the Mandara hill had agitated the whole ocean. By his roaring sounds, he deafened all his friends, and he inspired Krishna with his chivalrous activities. Once Krishna challenged all his friends and said, quote, "My dear friends, just see, I am jumping with great chivalrous prowess. Please do not flee away." Unquote. Upon hearing these challenging words, a friend named Varutapa counter-challenged the Lord and struggled against him. One of the friends once remarked, quote, "Sudama is trying his best to see Damodar defeated, and I think that if our powerful Subala joins him, they will be a very beautiful combination, like a valuable jewel bedecked with gold." Unquote. In these chivalrous activities, only Krishna's friends can be the opponents. Krishna's enemies can never actually be his opponents. Therefore, this challenging by Krishna's friends is called devotional service in chivalrous activities. Dana-vira, or chivalry in giving charity, may be divided into two parts, munificence and renunciation. A person who can sacrifice everything for the satisfaction of Krishna is called munificent. When a person desires to make a sacrifice because of seeing Krishna, Krishna is called the impetus of the munificent activity. When Krishna appeared as the son of Nanda Maharaj, in clear consciousness, Nanda Maharaj desired all auspiciousness for his son and thus began to give valuable cows in charity to all the Brahmins. The Brahmins were so satisfied by this charitable action that they were obliged to say that the charity of Nanda Maharaj had excelled the charity of such past kings as Maharaj Prithu and Nriga. When a person knows the glories of the Lord completely and is prepared to sacrifice everything for the Lord, he is called Sampradanika, or one who gives everything in charity for the sake of Krishna. When Maharaj Yudhisthira went with Krishna in the arena of the Rajasuya sacrifice, in his imagination he began to anoint the body of Krishna with pulp of sandalwood. He decorated Krishna with a garland hanging down to his knees. He gave Krishna garments all embroidered with gold. He gave Krishna ornaments all bedecked with valuable jewels. And he gave Krishna many fully decorated elephants, chariots, and horses. He further wished to give Krishna in charity his kingdom, his family, and his personal self also. After so desiring, when there was nothing actually to give in charity, Maharaj Yudhisthira became very perturbed and anxious. Similarly, Maharaj Bali once told his priest, Shukracharya, quote, "My dear sage, you are fully expert in knowledge of the Vedas, and as such, you worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, by Vedic rituals. As far as this Brahmin dwarf, the incarnation Vamanadeva, is concerned, if he is Lord Vishnu, a simple Brahmin, or even my enemy, I have decided to give to him in charity all the land he has asked for." Unquote. Maharaj Bali was so fortunate that the Lord extended before him his hand, which was reddish from touching the breast of the goddess of fortune, who is always smeared with red kumkum powder. In other words, although the personality of Godhead is so great that the goddess of fortune is always under his command for enjoyment, he still extended his hands to take charity from Maharaj Bali. A person who wants to give everything in charity to Krishna but does not want anything in return is considered the real renouncer. Thus, a devotee will refuse to accept any kind of liberation, even if it is offered by the Lord. Real love of Krishna becomes manifested when Krishna becomes the recipient of charity and the devotee becomes the giver. In the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, there is another example forwarded by Maharaj Dhruva. He says there, quote, "My dear Lord, I have practiced austerities and penances because I was desiring to receive something from you. But in exchange, you have allowed me to see you, who are never visible even to the great sages and saintly persons. I had been searching out some pieces of broken glass, but instead I have found the most valuable jewel. I am therefore fully satisfied, my Lord. I do not wish to ask anything more from your Lordship." Unquote. A similar statement is to be found in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 15th chapter, verse 48. The four sages, headed by Sanaka Muni, address the Lord as follows, quote, "Dear Supreme Personality of Godhead, your reputation is very attractive and free from all material contamination. Therefore, you are worthy of being glorified and are actually the reservoir of all places of pilgrimage. Auspicious persons who are fortunate enough to be engaged in glorifying your attributes and who actually know what your transcendental position is do not even care to accept liberation offered by you. Because they are so transcendentally enriched, they do not care to accept even the post of Indra, the heavenly king. They know that the post of the King of Heaven is also fearful, whereas for those who are engaged in glorifying your transcendental qualities, there is only joyfulness and freedom from all danger. As such, why should persons with this knowledge be attracted by a post in the heavenly kingdom?" Unquote. One devotee has described his feelings about the charity exhibited by King Mayuradvaj, quote, "I am faltering even to speak about the activities of Maharaj Mayuradvaj, to whom I offer my respectful obeisances," unquote. Mayuradvaj was very intelligent, and he could understand why Krishna came to him once in the garb of a Brahmin. Krishna demanded from him half of his body to be sawed off by his wife and son, and King Mayuradvaj agreed to this proposal. On account of his intense feeling of devotional service, King Mayuradvaj was always thinking of Krishna, and when he understood that Krishna had come in the garb of a Brahmin, he did not hesitate to part with half of his body. This sacrifice of Maharaj Mayuradvaj for Krishna's sake is unique in the world, and we should offer our all respectful obeisances to him. He had full knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the garb of a Brahmin, and he is known as the perfect Danavira or renouncer. Mm-hmm.